Words appear. The following is based on true events. In the hotel cinema, the justices watch themselves in a newsreel.
On February 11, 1948, at the Tokyo Tribunal for the Far East, Chief Prosecutor Keenan begins closing arguments. He states that the responsibility for Japan's militaristic actions rests not with the people, but with their leaders. On April 16th, the proceedings of the Tokyo War Crimes trial come to a close. The world now waits while the tribunal judges consider all of the evidence and arrive at their verdict.
Seated in darkness, Rowling stares thoughtfully. As his colleagues get to their feet, he joins them, then turns to see Justice Patrick fixing him with his stare. Rowling gives him a nod before heading off, then Patrick hobbles down an aisle. In a screening room, a film projector starts. NHK, Japan Broadcasting Corporation, presents in association with Netflix and the support of the Netherlands Film Fund and the Netherlands Film Production Incentive. A NHK, Japan Broadcasting Corporation, Fat Productions, and Don Carmody Television DCTV production. A newsreel shows citizens waving Japanese flags as a military procession passes. Tim Ahern, Paul Freeman, ordnance strafes the countryside, then a fighter plane crashes. Serge Hazanavicius, corpses litter the ground. Marcel Hensema, William Hope, Jonathan Hyde, a squadron drops torpedo bombs. A mushroom cloud appears. Michael Ironside, Irfan Khan. On a warship, a Japanese dignitary signs a document. Stephen McHattie, David Say, Shinya Tsukamoto, Julian Wadham. Bert Matthias, Hadwi Shminis, Gabiha Haraminayate, Jorge Franson, Kistudis Yaxtas. Justices preside over a courtroom, casting Kelly Valentine Hendry and Victor Jenkins. Production design consultant Naoji Kawaguchi, costumes by Brenda Schenner. Production designer Harry Amerlon, director of photography Rolf Deakins, NSC, edited by Daryl Davis, CCE, music by Robert Carley. Co-producers Takafumi Yuki, Elwin Louie. Producers Shinsuke Naito, Hans de Weers, David Cormican. Executive producers Takashi Enjo, Shinsuke Naito, David Lee, Hans de Weers, Don Carmody, David Cormican. Words appear under Japanese characters. Tokyo Trial. Written by Keys Van Banium, Rob King, Max Mannix, and Toru Takagi. With script contributions by Peter Verhoef. Directed by Rob King and Peter Verhoef. In the Imperial Hotel, Justices Heronelia, Kramer, Patrick, McDougall, and Northcroft share a table as Rowling approaches.
Good morning.
Justice Rowling.
Good morning.
I would like you to know that I would support your position on crime of aggression if you would agree to certain considerations.
That's interesting.
Rowling pulls up a chair, takes a seat, and gazes around the table.
The crime of aggression is an ex post facto law, which is a problem for me. However, I have decided to be realistic if I want to shape how this trial ends.
If, as you say, we agree to certain considerations.
Correct. Let me be clear that my reasons for recognizing crimes of aggression are different than yours.
Northcroft and McDougall nod.
I have concluded that one can reasonably construe this as comparable to a political crime in domestic law. Political criminals are at times detained when their actions threaten national stability. And I think that we should argue from this pre-established legal platform. Thus, we can state that those responsible for starting a war ought to be subject to punishment on the grounds that if they remain free, they might disturb the international order. Otherwise, peace and progress may never be achieved.
Northcroft exhales pipe smoke.
I'm afraid not, really. We will all be upholding the principle established by the precedents of the Nuremberg judgment and by the Pact of Paris of 1928 that wars of aggression are illegal.
Look, we've all come to the same conclusion. You just came by a different route. Why obsess about it?
Because, above all else, our profession is meant to interpret laws which, by their very nature, can be understood in different ways. And nothing is more important than the reasons for that interpretation.
We have to keep in mind that differences in the reasons may lead to differences in the verdicts and the sentencing.
And that is why we cannot waver from our position.
Justice Rowling straightens, fist balled on his knees. He scans the faces of his colleagues and shakes his head.
Then I'll not accept it your way.
Patrick Northcroft and McDougal gaze back impassively. Rowling gets up in a huff. He storms off. In a hotel room, files and defendants' photos lay atop a table, where Webb holds a document, face slumped on his hand. His eyes blink open, then he stands and crosses the room. He answers his desktop telephone.
Hello.
Ah, President Webb. I hope I'm not interrupting anything.
No, not at all.
When can I expect the verdicts to be delivered?
Well, General, we have 49,000 pages of evidence to consider.
We have to get a move on, sir.
MacArthur hangs up. Webb lingers for a moment before doing the same. Webb gazes uneasily. Rowling heads to the hotel bar, where a bartender in a white tuxedo wipes glasses. Justice May sits on a stool, eyeing a photo of a dark-haired woman.
One orange juice, please.
Sir.
Hello. Is this your wife?
Yes.
She's beautiful.
I finally heard from her today on our wedding anniversary.
She's safe.
Such a relief.
That's fantastic. I cannot imagine the strain of being here with a civil war going on in China.
Thank you.
Rowling takes out a photo of his wife and kids.
This is my family.
Wow, so many children.
Yeah, I would like to have one more, but I'm not so sure my wife would agree.
Well, we've reached an important crossroad in our deliberations. Once those decisions have been made, we can all get back to our lives and families, however large.
Justice May smiles warmly.
I find myself at odds with Patrick's group and about the crime of aggression. And I was wondering if you're joining their camp.
The vast majority of judges are Western. I want to be sure that what I decide for Asia is good and also seen as fair by the rest of the world, so I am joining the majority.
Suppressing his disappointment, Justice Rowling nods.
Well,
he sips his juice. In his room, Webb gazes out a window.
Come in.
Justice Patrick appears in the doorway.
Sir William.
Lord Patrick.
You asked to see me.
With the evidentiary phase of the trial over, it's a good idea to exchange opinions on how to move forward. I'm aware that you and some others have banded together, but as the president, I hope we'll be able to collaborate on our findings.
I'm sorry, President Webb, but circumstances have forced a certain number of us to push ahead. We have decided to write the final judgment ourselves.
I beg your pardon?
As we have a clear majority, we are entitled to do so.
Good day.
Later, Webb strides along a corridor, followed by Rowling and Bernard.
General MacArthur didn't bring me back here just to stand by and watch. I'm going to write my own judgment.
Your own?
As the president, I have the right and the responsibility to write a judgment, one that speaks for all the judges.
In the hotel restaurant, Justices May and Patrick share a table. The Chinese magistrate sips from a glass of water.
I am glad you've agreed to join the majority.
The majority view is reasonable, proportionate, and fair. It honors the victims.
May swirls his bowl with chopsticks.
But, I have to say, I still have some doubts about doing this without Justice Webb. He is the president of the tribunal.
But on the defense motion to dismiss,
On the ground that the crime of aggression did not exist, President Webb was unable to write a strong report. Neither could he unite us all. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes.
We appreciate that you want to write the sections pertaining to China. You are vital in truly bringing some closure to the war with Japan.
Let's hope so.
Justice Patrick regards his own plate with disinterest.
Are you feeling all right?
Just lately, I've become obsessed with eating a piece of good Scottish beef with a decent Yorkshire pudding. Don't seem to have appetite for anything else at all.
As May returns to his meal, Patrick scowls and licks his lips, fidgeting with his fork. In an office, as staffers type at desks, Webb oversees an aide's work.
Very good. Accentuate this point here.
He hands a pen to the assistant.
Thank you.
Another man hands him a paper. At a third desk, Webb reads a document over a staffer's shoulder as she types it out. Justice Patrick's room, the old Scotsman hobbles to his door with his cane. As he opens it, Northcroft hurries inside.
I've just heard that Webb is going to write his own action.
Well, how could he do that by himself? It'll run to 500 pages.
Unlike us, he's got his own stuff. Patrick!
He collapses.
Help! Someone!
A man approaches.
Get an ambulance. Patrick! Patrick!
He lies unresponsive. In a hospital, McDougal heads down a corridor and enters a ward with curtains separating patients' beds. He removes his hat and cranes his neck toward the resting Patrick. Northcroft rises from the bedside and approaches.
His lungs and circulation are under a great deal of strain. But they say he'll make a recovery.
McDougal's eyes dart.
What do we do now?
Press ahead. But we're gonna need some help.
The Canadian nods.
Right.
Northcroft eyes their stricken colleague, who sleeps soundly, his mouth hanging open. Back in the office, a woman deposits an armload of documents on Webb's desk. The tribunal president gazes up from a report and eyes the stack wryly. His colleagues work in another office, where a handsome man accompanies Northcroft inside.
Good morning, everyone.
Justices gaze over.
This is Quentin. Quentin Baxter. A specialist in drafting legal documents, who I've invited here to help with our cause. I'm proud to say he's also from New Zealand.
Yes, we'll think I best get started right away.
Good man. Why don't you take that spot over there while I'll get you a cup of coffee?
Okay. As Zarayanov offers his hand to the newcomer, McDougal watches curiously.
General Zarayanov of Soviet Union. He wants it clear that he will write the section on Shigemitsu. This man's fate is very important to us.
Great. He writes the draft, and I'll take a pass at it so that it fits with the rest of our document.
He will be aggravated by your response. It implies immediate disrespect to say that you alter his words.
I thought you were the interpreter.
I have been present in every meeting of this trial from the beginning. I know the stakes involved, and I know how best to prevent a necessary incident.
Till the general, I will be happy to receive his section on Shigemitsu.
Quentin Baxter smiles. As he drapes his coat over a chair and takes a seat, the interpreter updates General Zarayanov. The Russian jurist nods. Justice Rowling passes through a hospital corridor flanked by medicine cabinets. Hat in hand, he enters the ward where Patrick faces him as he lies in bed.
Rowling, how nice of you to come.
Rowling sits at his adversary's bedside.
How are you?
Phlebitis, other complications in the legs. Nothing will keep me down for long.
He grabs a handkerchief.
I truly hope you get back up on your feet.
He wipes his mouth.
Oh, I'm not too sure you want that too soon.
Rowling smiles and nods.
Rowling, understand. I once believed the world was full of possibility.
And now?
I saw two world wars destroy Europe. After the first international conferences didn't stop the second. You get the pillow.
As Rowling arranges Patrick's pillows against the bed's headboard, the patient props himself against them. The Dutchman returns to his seat.
If we fail again to make a new mark in the sand, what is the world to believe? Well,
we should focus on interpreting the law correctly if we want to make, as you say, a new mark in the sand.
Nuremberg has given us a legal precedent that could lead us from the violence. We have to defend and uphold that precedent here. We will never gain a permanent foothold.
You make it all sound so simple.
I admit, it's very complicated. But people who start wars must be held accountable, and this is the quickest and clearest way to do that.
I want to tell you in person that I'm writing my own dissenting opinion.
Justice Patrick closes his eyes.
I think that you and I have the same objective. But as a jurist, I cannot compromise on my principles, even if this means that I'm alone in this.
Now that we are laying our knives upon the table, I should tell you that I intend to fulfill the charter.
Rowling averts his eyes and nods.
Good.
He rises and offers the older man his hand. Justice Patrick shakes it firmly.
All the best. Thank you.
Rowling collects his hat, then turns and steps away. Patrick follows him with his gaze. Rowling exits the ward as a nurse makes her way inside. In the office of the majority, Zarianov adds papers to the stack before him. Across the table, Quentin Baxter sits at a typewriter, a cigarette holder dangling from his lips. MacDougall examines a document.
Only missing a time sequence.
Got it here.
Good.
Behind them, Northcroft paces as he peruses a document, pipe in his mouth. He takes a seat next to Kramer, who sits with Justice May.
Are you happy with Quentin Baxter's work?
What I like is how he cleverly amended Zaryanov's position against Shigemitsu.
It's less harsh.
May turns his attention to his typewriter. In Webb's office, staffers work by desktop lamplight. Stacks of files and books cover their desks, and a fan blows at the back of the room. President Webb stands reading a document near an assistant's cluttered workstation. In the foyer of the Dutch liaison, Rowling paces by a door with his back turned as Willink approaches.
Rowling!
They shake hands.
What
is so important to bring you out this way? I have written a dissenting opinion. Willink nods. You do know that every dissenting opinion can be used to deny the legitimacy of the tribunal and the final judgment. Too many elements of the majority judgment are, in my view, flawed. I can never put my name to it. The United Nations passed a resolution that favors the Nuremberg principles. The Netherlands supported it. Your dissent will undermine our commitment to international law. Rowling shakes his head. I remind you that I am here as an independent judge. You've lost your bearings. You're acting like some sort of misguided post-war resistance hero, but you will only give hope to war criminals. Given all the time we judges have spent on this tribunal and all that I have studied and heard, I am doing what I believe is right. General Wheeling glowers at his countrymen, who turns and exits the building. In the office of the majority, Quentin Baxter paces as he reads, blowing cigarette smoke. He passes Northcroft, who sits at a table gazing down at a thick volume on his lap. Across from him, Justice MacDougall studies his copy of the report with keen interest, a cigar between his fingers. Northcroft hurries up a stairwell, report in hand.
Excuse me.
He steps aside as a lady descends, then walks briskly up another flight of steps before crossing a vast antechamber. Striding up to a door, he knocks.
Come in.
He enters Webb's bustling office.
Northcroft.
Here we are.
He hands Webb the voluminous judgment, nods, and goes back the way he came. The president turns to his staffers, who gaze uneasily. Webb reads the cover page. International Military Tribunal for the Far East. Judgment of 19 July 1948. As Rowling enters the hotel lobby, Pal carries a newspaper.
Rowling, have you seen this? The majority judgment has been submitted.
Did you see a draft of it?
No, but Webb must have approved it.
As Rowling hurries away, Pal reads the front page. The Dutchman makes his way to room 244. Inside, Webb sets aside a document and stands.
Coming.
Have you submitted a majority judgment?
Yes. I think the content is sensible. So I've agreed that it should become the official judgment.
If it's any consolation, they dismissed the murder count for the attack on Pearl Harbor.
And what about our dissenting opinions? Is any of that considered or included?
Unclear, but still possible.
This is so absurd and disrespectful.
Here.
He picks up the judgment.
Damned if I know how they did it so fast. Note that the penalties have been left blank. They acceded to my request that all 11 justices consider the options. Now, this is our last chance. I just hope a majority of us will preclude the death penalty.
Rowling stares bitterly. Outside, a guard waves a vehicle through a checkpoint. Bernard and Webb approach a courthouse staircase.
So, we'll start with a discussion on the death penalty, which I personally abhor.
With the Emperor absolved, how could we send his subordinates to the gallows?
Webb glances over his shoulder. At the foot of the steps, Justice Patrick hands his briefcase to Northcroft, then grips the banister and starts up. The New Zealander follows close behind. In chambers, the tribunal convenes. President Webb takes his seat at the head of the table. Rowling gazes at Patrick, then they nod to one another.
Very well. We'll start from this side and move round the table.
Webb glances at Kramer.
The death penalty is essential.
Webb jots a note and gestures.
Men like Tojo can be blocked from power just with a life sentence. So, as you know, I am totally against the death penalty.
I agree with Justice Bernard. Let me add this. The Emperor, who was able to terminate the war, could also have prevented it from the start. Thus, it would be manifestly unjust to hand out death penalties to the cabinet ministers and military officers alone.
If we do not impose the death penalty, then the government could release them when Japan gets back its sovereignty. They'll have slipped through our hands, and they'll stir up another war.
Haranelia paces to a window.
Justice Northcroft?
I personally find the death penalty distasteful. However, I will be asking for the strongest possible punishment to prevent any further threats to New Zealand. I will be asking for the death penalty.
Webb glances down, frowning. He makes a notation before lifting his gaze.
Justice Haranelia?
The Filipino jurist turns around.
If we walked from here to the far side of Tokyo and counted every tree, every leaf that's still living, the number we arrived at would hardly add up to the soldiers and the civilians killed by this war. There should be a death penalty. I'm not here to seek revenge, but the crimes they committed, the atrocities, are just too horrendous to be overlooked.
Webb jots on the paper.
Justice Zaryanov, will you uphold Stalin's policy to abandon the death penalty?
Я не могу голосовать за смертную казнь.
He cannot vote death.
A faint smile crosses Webb's lips as he makes a note and eyes Pal.
We know that you oppose.
I hold each and every one of the accused must not be found guilty.
Haranelia averts his gaze.
Justice Rowling, how do you vote?
Rowling leans forward and sets his elbows on the table.
We abolished capital punishment in the Netherlands, but right after the war, we implemented a special law that allowed us to execute Nazi collaborators. It was an exceptional ruling brought about by unthinkable crimes, and with that in mind, I support the death penalty for those responsible for atrocities, but I insist the death penalty not to be applied to crimes of aggression.
Justice MacDougall.
At Nuremberg, they handed down death sentences, but not for those convicted only on the crime of aggression. So, I stand with Rowling. Yes, for atrocities. No, to the sole charge of aggression.
Webb gives a defeated wave of his hand.
I concur with my colleague from the Philippines. They committed egregious crimes in China and throughout the Pacific. Of course, some defendants' crimes were more serious than others. I say that in certain cases, the death penalty is required.
But did this trial treat the accused fairly enough to the extent that we can, with confidence, say it's permissible to take their lives?
There is a danger that we, the Allied powers, may be viewed as exacting revenge on the leaders of the nation we defeated.
Before this trial began, some Allied leaders insisted that instead of convening a tribunal, we should carry out summary executions by firing squad. We have spent 2.5 years hearing evidence from both the defense and the prosecution. We have even listened to some propaganda-inspired speeches by the accused.
To ensure a fair trial, the Allied powers made the effort to invite 11 justices from 11 Allied nations.
Indeed. So how much fairer could we have been?
Bernard avoids Patrick's gaze.
Very well. It's clear that the death penalty is an option. Although very few of us seem eager to hand out death sentences on charges of aggression alone. So then, we proceed to sentencing.
The accused Shigetaro Shimada was Minister of the Navy in Prime Minister Tojo's cabinet when Japan started the war with the United States, and later doubled as Naval Chief of Staff. He was charged not only with responsibility for starting war of aggression, but also with responsibility for atrocities committed by the Navy in the form of conventional war crimes.
Admiral Shimada.
Webb unpins a photo of the distinguished defendant from the corkboard and takes a seat as Haranilia eyes his picture in his file.
There are those of us who do not believe he deserves the death penalty.
I disagree.
MacDougall frowns at Rowling.
Death. We must mete out harsh penalties, including capital punishment, to those responsible for atrocities.
He was Tojo's lackey. He was a mere briefcase holder.
But he allowed his men to shoot and kill surviving enemy after their ships had sunk.
I agree that Shimada had a lot of authority over his men and that he abused it. Military leaders should be responsible for what their men do on the battlefield.
Let's vote.
The accused Koki Hirota served as Prime Minister and Foreign Minister during the period when Japan expanded the war into China and Asia. He is charged with the responsibility for starting war of aggression and with responsibility for atrocities or conventional war crimes committed in Nanking. Hirota chose not to take the witness stand.
Webb unpins the black and white photo of the mustached Hirota from the corkboard. Setting the pin aside, he places the portrait on the table before returning to his seat.
Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Hirota.
He remained silent throughout the trial. Well, to me, that says he considers himself responsible.
Just because a man stays silent, it doesn't mean he's guilty.
He was given the opportunity to defend himself, and he did not take it.
In Japanese culture, it is considered disgraceful to try and explain what one has done.
He was prime minister when Japan tried to expand its power over Asia in 1936. Mm-hmm. It was he who decided on Japan's policy of aggression.
Hirota did believe in expanding Japan's sphere of influence. The proclamation, Asia for Asians, was just their version of imperialism. And Hirota tried to accomplish this through economic, not military means.
Rowling shrugs.
Imperialism by itself is not a crime.
Speaking of imperialism, both the Western powers and Japan committed theft from our perspective. But I think the most recent and worst theft was committed by Japan. Hirota's economic policies were aggressive. They're the ones that set Japan on its inevitable course to war.
Он прав. Широта давно положил глаз и на Советский Союз.
He's right. Hirota always had his eye on Soviet Union.
The threat of communism may have troubled him.
Just as it did in many other nations.
Да вы издеваетесь над нами, защищая фашистов. Агрессивная война может быть оправдана, когда угроза коммунизма достигает определенного уровня.
Are you trying to mock us while defending fascists? Is the war of aggression justified when the threat of communism reaches a particular level?
Let me repeat what I've said many times before. There will always be strong and weak nations. War, therefore, is an inevitable evil. The international community has not reached a stage where war can be considered a crime. In this circumstance, we cannot try, convict, or punish these individuals.
My turn to repeat. That approach will soon trigger World War III. In Europe, waging aggressive war has already become a crime.
Japan accepted the Potsdam Declaration, which clearly states stern justice should be meted out to all war criminals. That should include the national leaders.
Hirota did not voice opposition to a war when he had the chance. At that meeting of former premiers immediately before Pearl Harbor.
And despite knowing about the atrocities in Nanking, Hirota did nothing effective to abate it. In short, he was criminally negligent.
There is evidence that he filed a protest with the war minister over what was happening in Nanking.
Then he should have resigned.
A foreign minister could have done little to influence the army. And beyond that, his hands were tied.
Filing a protest was all he could do? To let the people of China.
Clearly, he was guilty of inaction. Hirota should have resigned or spoken directly to the emperor to put an end to the tragedy in Nanking.
May nods.
I won't vote for his death, though.
Webb gives a firm shake of his head.
Let's call the vote.
Another photo appears, that of the bespectacled Shigenori Togo.
As a member of the cabinet, Togo attended all the meetings prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he consented to all the decisions.
He joined the cabinet to avoid war with America. The evidence couldn't be clearer.
No. I say that he participated in the Japanese conspiracy to wage war on America.
The trouble is, conspiracy can cast too wide a net over everything. It is a concept only found in the Anglo-American justice system.
Well, where are we?
Японцы, как и фашисты, были нацистами. Они хотели овладеть всем миром.
Oh, the Japanese were fascists like Nazis. Together they schemed the world domination.
Rowling stands, paces past MacDougall, and turns his back.
The Soviet Union was their big target.
I'm not so sure there was a clear plan at the outset.
Я вам говорю, Япония хотела оккупировать Австралию.
I tell you, Japan was considering a plan to occupy Australia.
Though I agree with you that Japan planned to occupy my country,
I don't think that was part of their original strategy. Once they started a war on Chinese soil, Japan had to keep pushing its battle lines forward to protect and preserve what it already conquered. They started a fire they couldn't put out, with the resultant consequence that they went to war with Britain and America. I think that's how we should look at the whole picture.
What difference could it possibly make how we look at it? In the end, Japan waged aggressive war against China and America and Britain and Australia and the Netherlands. And it is Togo who is directly responsible for Pearl Harbor.
How was he supposed to stop the military? They were too powerful.
The simple fact is that he didn't resign. He voted for the war. He did not discharge his duty as a cabinet member to act in opposition to the war.
Let's vote, gentlemen.
No.
As Rowling turns to face his colleagues, Justice Powell glances over.
His purpose in remaining in the cabinet was to end, as soon as possible, the war that he had failed to stop. A man who recognized his moral duty shouldn't be made to pay this price for his courage.
I agree with Justice Rowling. Otherwise, in the future, nobody will take the risk that Togo took.
As I said earlier, when the Japanese leadership met to decide whether or not to go to war with the United States and Great Britain, in the end, Togo voted for war. Had he opposed it, the cabinet would have dissolved and a new prime minister would have been selected. I hardly call that an attempt on Togo's part to stop the war from happening. Under the law, he is guilty. This is the precedent we should set.
Patrick gazes stonily at Rowling.
Togo is hardly to blame for the war with China. As for the American Pacific War, he cannot be absolved completely.
Let us vote.
Rowling lights a cigarette and returns to his seat, gazing askance at his colleagues. As citizens head down a walkway toward the courthouse, defendants file into the box.
In November 1948, 2.5 years after the trial began, President Webb takes 7 days to read out in court the final judgment of 1,212 pages. On the last day of court, the sentences are presented to each of the accused, a moment dividing them between life or death.
In the gallery, Issa sits beside Aidit, who folds her hands tightly. In chambers, May gazes at Haranelia as they put on their robes.
So at the last moment, you also chose to write a separate opinion?
After reading Pal's length of paper, I decided it was my primary duty to counter his one-sided defense with the Japanese, with a supplementary opinion.
Nearly 1,000 days since we began. Sometimes it felt interminable.
Yes, it's a long time to wait for justice.
In court, Webb reads from a document.
Under the charter, the judgment I have read is the judgment of the tribunal. The member for India dissents from the majority judgment and has filed a statement of his reasons for such a dissent. The members for France and the Netherlands dissent in part from the majority judgment and have filed statements of their reasons for such dissents. The member for the Philippines has filed a separate opinion concurring with the majority. Generally, I share the view of the majority as to the facts, but without recording any dissent, I have filed a brief statement of my reasons for upholding the charter and the jurisdiction of the tribunal and some general considerations that influenced me in deciding on the sentences. These documents will be part of the record and will be available to the Supreme Commander, a Defense Counsel, and to others who may be concerned. Defense counsel have applied for a reading in court of these separate opinions, but the tribunal had already considered the matter and decided that they should not be so read. The tribunal adheres to this decision.
In the countryside, citizens congregate around a radio.
Accused Hirota Koki, on count of the indictment on which you have been convicted, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East sentences you
to death by hanging.
The aging Hirota removes his headset and sets it on a lectern. He bows toward the gallery before being led off by an MP. At her house, Eta listens expectantly, seated at her piano.
Accused Togo Shiganori,
on the counts of the indictment on which you have been convicted, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East sentences you to imprisonment for 20 years.
As Issa grips her mother's arms, Aided's head sinks. Roland glances toward the gallery and closes his eyes.
Accused Shigemitsu Mamoru, on the counts of the indictment on which you have been convicted, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East sentences you to imprisonment for 7 years.
Leaning on a lectern, the bespectacled Shigemitsu lifts his gaze. Justice Patrick sits with hands folded. An MP hands a headset to Tojo, then the balding ex-statesman puts them on.
Accused Tojo Hideki, on the counts of the indictment on which you have been convicted, the International Military Tribunal for the Far East sentences you to death by hanging.
Takayama listens solemnly from his house. In court, Tojo removes his headset and bows before an MP starts to lead him away. Justice Rowling's stare fixes toward the defendant box. His gaze drifts downward and he lowers his head, his mouth curled in a grimace. Later, as the tribunal mingles in chambers, Zarianov salutes May and shakes his hand. Rowling collects his coat, briefcase, and hat and starts off. Justice Patrick gazes toward the departing Dutchman, then turns to greet Kramer. They shake hands among their colleagues. Later, in MacArthur's office, Justice Rowling sits across from the Supreme Commander.
You have the power to mitigate the sentences of Toko, of Hirota, of Shigemitsu.
The tribunal asked me to stay out of the courtroom. I stayed out.
But you are the only one who can reduce their sentences.
Look. This is not the time to be looking back.
He stands and paces.
Japan is a democracy. They have a brand new constitution. Women have the right to hold political office for the very first time. They're rebuilding and the rest of the world is moving on. Take a look at what's going on in East Berlin, the Korean Peninsula, not to mention the Soviets.
He shifts on his feet.
There will be other battles to be fought, other wars to be won. Right now, be grateful that your time here is over. You get to go home.
MacArthur fixes Rowling with a firm stare, then steps away. The disgruntled jurist heaves a deflated sigh. Later, as he and Takayama walk along a beach, the author carries a bundle under one arm.
Some defense lawyers are preparing to file an appeal with the Supreme Court of the United States. And if that appeal is upheld, I would come back to Japan for a retrial, and we could see each other again.
Do you personally think this might happen?
Well, I don't think so. 2.5 years of work will not be reversed.
Takayama unwraps the cloth-covered bundle.
A gift for you.
Framed artwork depicts peasants crossing a footbridge beneath a rain shower.
A Hiroshige print.
Thank you.
This is beautiful.
As Hiroshige did with Van Gogh, you provided me with inspiration.
Takayama smiles and sways on his feet. Staring fondly at his friend, he bows.
I am glad to have met you, Professor Bart Waring.
I'm glad that I met you, Takayama-san.
Silhouetted against the warm, hazy sky, the men bow to one another. As Rowling admires the artwork, Takayama joins his side. At night, vehicles sit parked in front of the Imperial Hotel. Rowling adjusts the cuffs of his sport coat as he proceeds down a corridor. He pauses at the open door of a room where a bellhop carries Patrick's luggage.
Eager to get back to your garden?
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to it a great deal.
The elderly jurist glances back into his room, then accompanies Rowling down the corridor.
I must say how much I appreciated your work, Justice Rowling. Even some of your arguments.
Rowling smiles.
We may have saved millions of future lives.
I hope so.
Northcroft is suggesting a permanent tribunal to try war criminals, but not led by the United States.
Oh, maybe located in the Netherlands.
Patrick lifts his brow. Rounding a corner, the friendly adversaries proceed down another passage. Rowling glances around, fiddling with his necktie. Patrick eyes MacDougall in the lobby.
There you are. All right, let's go.
He leads them to the others, gathered in the restaurant.
Here we are.
As a man readies a still camera, Webb directs his colleagues near a curtain stage. Six standing justices form a row behind their five seated colleagues. Then the photographer motions them to squeeze in. As the interpreter looks on over his shoulder, the flashbulb pops. The black and white image freezes, morphing into an archival photo of the actual tribunal members. As the view fades down, words appear. 23 of 25 men charged with crimes against peace were found guilty. The charge of crimes against humanity was not applied. Seven death sentences were handed down via the charge of conventional war crimes. Justice Rowling became a professor of international law at Groningen University. Under his leadership, the Peace Research Institute was founded. Justice Patrick returned to the Scottish Supreme Court, but his health never recovered. President Webb returned to the Australian Federal Supreme Court. He led a peaceful life surrounded by children and grandchildren. Justice May returned home, became a supporter of Mao Zedong, and worked as a legal bureaucrat. Later, he became a victim of the Great Cultural Revolution. Justice Haranelia soon retired from public service. He spent the rest of his life on his home island of Panay and in Manila. Justice Powell represented his country on the UN International Law Commission. He traveled to Japan four times and visited several war criminals in Sugamo Prison. Justice Bernard became a legal bureaucrat for colonial France in Africa. After retiring, he returned to his home in Arla in southern France. Justice Northcroft returned to the Supreme Court of New Zealand. He was awarded a knighthood for his contribution to the Tokyo trial. Justice MacDougall returned to sit on the Appellate Court of Quebec. He was highly regarded in Canada for his contribution in Tokyo. Justice Kramer retired from the military and started a law firm in Washington, where he remained busy for most of his life. Justice Zarayanov remained a loyal subordinate of Stalin. He was expelled from the Communist Party after Stalin's death and deprived of his military rank. In 1998, 50 years after the conclusion of Tokyo trial, 120 countries adopted the rules that defined the establishment of the ICC, or the International Criminal Court. In 2002, the ICC opened in the Netherlands. The United States, Russia, and China have not joined the ICC, which is strongly criticized by some for not playing the role it is meant to play. Tumultuous wars and conflicts are still taking place throughout the world. Credits appear. Based on an original idea by NHK Japan, Japan Broadcasting Corporation, narrator Stacy Keach. This dramatization is inspired by true events. However, certain scenes, characters, names, businesses, incidents, locations, and events have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes. And in those instances, any similarity to actual persons living or dead or to actual entities or events is purely coincidental. This film is protected under the laws of Canada, United States, Netherlands, Japan, and other countries. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or reproduction of this motion picture or videotape or any part thereof, including the soundtrack, may result in criminal penalties. The production of this episode did not harm any animals. Copyright 2016 Tokyo Productions, Inc., Fat Productions BV, NHK. All rights reserved. Red letters appear within three brightly tinged eggs, NHK. Logos appear, NEP, NHK, Throne, Serif. Multicolored stripes flank a logo, DCTV, Don Carmody Television. A logo, Fat Productions, from Amsterdam to Tokyo, Film Arts Theater Television.